our star guest today grew up on Rhode Island and made his Broadway debut at the age of 8. Well, for Nicholas King, there was no going back. By 12, he'd already worked with Tom Selleck and before long was best friends with Liza Minnelli, a friendship which continues to this day. He's appeared at Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, Birdland, amongst many, many other venues. And I'm very pleased to say that he's joining us on the programme today. Nicholas King, welcome to Community Connections.
Thank you. So nice to meet you and so nice to be here.
A Rhode Island boy. Was it a musical childhood for you?
Yes, and that had nothing to do with Rhode Island. Rhode Island's a beautiful place, but my family, they're all musicians, with the exception of my mom and dad, who I call just regular civilians. Everybody else in my family is musical. They're either in a band or they play instruments or they're singers. From my grandmother, my grandfather, my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, everybody is musically inclined. And my particular family branch were the only ones sort of in the family to do it professionally and to take it, you know, outside of the living room. And my grandmother's a wonderful singer. She was back in the 60s. She was like the girl singer in the 60s and 70s who would perform for all the comics. So her big three that she toured sort of the world with were Bill Cosby, Rodney Dangerfield, and Don Rickles. And so she was the girl singer who would go ahead in front of them and do, you know, 30 minutes with her band. And they would travel, you know, the Playboy circuit and the Catskills in Las Vegas and the cruise ships and all that stuff. So it's sort of just been around me, you know, since before I was born. And growing up, it was just sort of a very, you know, I don't remember ever deciding, oh, I'm going to go into show business. I just always knew that that's what I was going to do. It was just never really a question. I don't remember ever deciding to do it. It was just sort of, I guess, decided for me in a genetic way that I didn't know that there was anything else that I ever wanted to do. This was just all that I ever knew how to do.
You were born into it. Were you ever given the opportunity of traveling with your grandma and meeting some of these people?
Well, you know, by the time I had come around, she had sort of taken a step back from live performing and she went into more vocal teaching and vocal coaching. She had a lot of her own gigs, but they were more solo gigs. So I mean, she'd pick me up from school and, you know, instead of going home to bake cookies and watch TV, she'd say, get in the back seat, we're going to a gig, you know. And so I grew up sort of watching her perform, you know, her concerts and, you know, growing up on the side of the bandstand and watching, you know, her do her thing and hanging out with the bass players and the trombone players and, you know, sort of in that world, you know, of live performing and loving every second of it, you know, and learning how a show is created, how to create an act, how to pace it right, you know, when to put in a good ballad, when to put in this, when to do that. Because my grandmother's really got great instincts for that and a great ear. And so, you know, I just grew up surrounded by it. And it was, you know, it's a massive education, you know, when you're 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, this is what you're exposed to, you know.
And you were on the Broadway stage at the age of 8 in Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, that was my Broadway debut.
Not bad for an 8-year-old.
No, but, you know, it doesn't really lend you to much popularity on the playground, you know, when you say, what'd you do this weekend? Well, I went to Nana's house and I went, you know, camping with my uncle. What did you do? Well, I did 8 shows a week, you know. I played a teacup for 8, you know, 8 shows, but, you know, it was a very particular childhood. I have no complaints. I always feel like I had the most magical childhood in the world. You know, I had a very, very supportive family and parents who were very supportive of my passion and a family that was very, very supportive. So, you know, and filled with a lot of adventures and a lot of exciting parties and trips and shows, and it was every week was something different. And you know, I feel very lucky that I had a really magical childhood.
By the age of 12, you were already appearing on stage with Tom Selleck, many many other big names. Carol Burnett was there as well.
Was there
a point where you suddenly thought, actually, I'm past my childhood stage work, but I'm not quite old enough for the adult stage work? Was there a dip, or were you able to keep going fairly smoothly?
There was a massive dip. And I remember the day, actually, because I'm going to drop a name now, so don't mind if I go pick it up. I was at Liza's house, and you know, I was doing some auditions, and I was working on a show with Neil Simon. Actually, it was to be his last play. and I was the lead in it, and it was really thrilling to do because I was just a Neil Simon fanatic from the time I was, 10, and I think I read all his plays by the time I was 12. I just, I loved it. I loved his way of writing. I loved everything about it, and I was such a student for him. And I loved working with him. I loved working on that show, but it couldn't get off the ground, and it had nothing to do with the play. It just we kept losing funding, and there was one, and his health, and for one reason or another, the show never took off, and it was really depressing. Because I knew that I was aging out of it, and the roles that I was getting were less and less and less, and I was really sort of depressed and really bummed out. And I was over Liza's house one day, and she could tell I was in a grumpy mood, and she said, "What's the matter?" I said, "Well, I'm not getting these shows that I want, and I'd never not been working since I was four. I never had more than a couple months off from the time I was 4 years old, so I didn't really know what downtime was." And she said, without beating an eyelid, I sort of felt, well, this is it. I've hit my slump, and without missing a beat, she takes a drag of her cigarette. I kid you not, Andrew. And she goes, "Well, honey, you got to do a nightclub act." And of course, I didn't know what she was talking about. I was 13, and I said, "Well, what's a nightclub act?" And so she sat with me at her home on her bed. We sat with a pad and a pen, and she wrote out an entire act for me. Because her way of thinking was, well, if the roles aren't coming to you, then you go to the roles, do the roles that you want to do, and do a nightclub act. And she basically did for me what Fred Ebb had done for her, 50 years earlier or 40 years earlier, by creating an act that was around me and around the roles that I wanted to play, and bring them into a little setting, and to bring them to little nightclubs. And so the slump came with acting, but then I sort of picked it up again with music and with live performing, which I hadn't really done. I was primarily an actor from the time I was four to about 12. That's really all that I'd really done. And so she was the first person to sort of give me that fire to say, "Oh, well, I can do live concerts and I can do live shows." And then I met Mike Renzi, who would become my right hand and my musical director when I turned 17. And then that just catapulted things into a very different direction. So I'm lucky to say that I've been working consistently. This year marks 30 years officially for me in show business. And there were a couple little slumps here there, but ultimately I've been keeping myself afloat and making a living and working consistently since I'm 4 years old, really.
You mentioned Liza Minnelli. I did want to explore your friendship with her because she is the ultimate icon who's still with us, really. Sadly, recently we've lost Robert Redford, but you've got your gran to thank for your connection with Liza, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, my grandmother became her vocal coach after Liza had gone through some health problems. She enlisted the help of my grandmother, and my grandmother really helped her. My grandmother's got a wonderful singing technique and has helped so many people over the decades, and Liza being one of them. And she really brought Liza's voice back to, to some really good strength. After Liza had she had vocal surgery, she had a lot of health issues, and she just latched onto my grandmother's technique. And Liza's a great student. She doesn't rest on her laurels. She's always wanting to learn things. She's always curious about how to improve. And the biggest advice that she ever gave to me was, don't ever be the smartest person in the room. Surround yourself with people that are more talented than you. And I think she saw in my grandmother that she had my grandmother has this technique and had this way of singing that she felt was really great. And so she latched onto it. And they became inseparable and became really close. And so as a result of my grandmother being at the house all the time, I'd be at the house all the time. And then Liza would come see my shows. And then she directed my first nightclub act when I was 12, and just has just been, such an intrinsic part of my growth as an artist since then.
Let's pick up another name that you've mentioned, Mike Renzi. A massive name, but so important in your life. What was it about Mike's approach to you that really saw your career take off again in a slightly different direction?
Well, Mike gave me the freedom to be creative and to try new things. And Mike was always showing me new songs and playing me things I'd never heard before, listening to records I'd never heard before, and just giving me an education. And I don't know that it was necessarily his goal to educate me, but it was his. I think he found in me a kindred spirit of someone who appreciated the same material that he did. So for him, it was more of just, oh, I want to share this with you. And of course, I just absorbed it like a sponge, and I ran with it. But he gave me the confidence in the same way that Liza did, which is, when you're a young person in this business, it's hard to be always taken seriously, because when you're 17 years old, how much life experience do you have? And when you're doing a show and you're singing a gut-wrenching ballad, or you're doing something, people aren't, they don't always take it so seriously. And so to have people like Liza and people like Mike, in your corner to say, no, this kid's got something, take a listen. It fills you with confidence, and it fills you with inspiration to say, well, I can do that, and to have their support is really something very special. And I think that's something that I try to take with me now whenever I meet young artists, to give them the support, go to the shows, support them, use them on things, and give them a voice, and give them the support, give them a helping hand. No one gets anywhere alone. And so I was very lucky to have Mike and Liza and various people, Carol. I mean, Carol Burnett did my liner notes for my first record, and I don't have the clout that those people do, but if I can lend a hand to a young artist and support them and bring them onto my shows, or even something simple as a Facebook post just to say, hey, check out their music, they're really good. I think it's carrying on that tradition of support and helping people. And that's something that I got from Mike and Liza and all these people that I value tremendously.
Do you find, particularly maybe in America, that there is a support network of artists who want to bring on other artists?
Well, I don't know what it's like other places. I've not spent extensive time in the UK. I've not spent extensive time basically anywhere outside of the US, here and there, but I don't have too much knowledge about how things operate outside of here. But I'd say it's a good 50-50. There's a lot of self-conservation and, looking out for yourself. And I've experienced that, but I've experienced, this is going to sound wacky, but I find that the higher caliber of the artist, the more supportive they are. And when you have someone who's a little disgruntled, maybe, or someone who never really quite had the breaks that they wanted to, or someone who didn't really have the success that maybe they had hoped to get, they tend to be the more stingy ones when it comes to the support. But the people that have had all the success and won all the awards and have all the accolades, they're the ones that are pushing the support of young talent and other people. And so again, I feel very lucky. I didn't really face a whole lot of that, in the sense that, I had Mike, I had Liza, I had Carol, I had Hal Prince, I had a lot of people that were supporting too. So I never really faced that. I didn't really face the disgruntled people that were, trying to hold someone back. I feel very lucky, and I know that I speak from a place of privilege in this. I know that this is not typical. And I do recognize that. And to me, it just fills me with gratitude that I've been able to have that and to see that beautiful side of show business and that beautiful side of support from other artists. So I can't speak for what it is on a general. I can only speak from my experience, but my experience has been very supportive.
You've also won quite a number of awards in your career, haven't you, as well? It must be lovely to be honoured by your peers.
Yeah, I mean, you never do it for that reason. You do it because you love the craft, and you want to do it. It's this fire inside you that you can't really quell, and you don't do it for an award. You don't do it for an accolade. You do it because you have to. There's a funny quote that apparently I said, and I don't remember ever saying it, but my mother will tell you, when I was about 4 or 5 years old in the back seat of the car singing my little heart out, and my mom just said, Nicholas, can we just for like 5 minutes, can we just be quiet? Can we just not sing for like 5 minutes? And the quote that I said to her was, but Mom, I have to sing or I will die. I was 5 years old. I told her, if I stop, I will die. And I laugh at that, and we all laugh at that, but I do think that there's a little bit of truth to that. I mean, I don't think I had any esoteric, deep reasoning for that, but I do think there's a little bit of that in all of us. If we stop it, I don't know what we would do. As artists, we have it in us. And if we don't know how to stop, we have to just keep going. So I think that's the real reason, that you do it all. But it is a beautiful feeling when someone says, hey, you did a good job, and I like what you did.
Well, we are very pleased that you have done what you're doing. Let's look at today. What are you working on at the moment? You've had an album come out, haven't you? And you're also working with a partner on a musical.
I've had quite a few collaborations. When Mike Renzi passed away in 2021, I didn't really know what to do because, he was my right hand. He was my musical inspiration. We were each other's sort of muses, and so to lose that was very jarring. And it happened overnight, basically. And I was a bit at sea for about a year, trying to figure out who I am as an artist. What do I want to do? What stories do I want to tell? And I didn't really know. And I I basically was able to sort of rekindle a relationship and have developed a great creative partnership with my friend Billy Stritch, who of course I know, who was Liza's musical director for many decades, and Billy and I have worked on a lot of wonderful shows together, and that's been nice, you know. And then I met a wonderful singer named Seth Sykes, who I met on the street. I met on 55th Street in Manhattan, and kindred spirits. I mean, I met him and I thought he was so sensational. He had the same passion, you know, that I could really latch onto, and I loved watching him perform. And I after we performed together one night, the same weekend that we met, actually, he stopped me on the street and said, you know, would you be in my show this weekend? And I said, sure. And after that show, it was like this connection of, wow, you love the same stuff that I do. And so we an act was formed, and we met about, I don't know, 3 years ago or so now. And since then, we've done, I think we tallied it, about 115 concerts together since then. We've been on the road for about 2.5 years doing this act. And so that's been really fun, you know, to expand my brain into. I've never done a duo act before. I've never been interested in that. But Seth is really, really smart and really talented. And we've had a ball doing these shows together. And what I'm working on now, actually, which I haven't really announced yet, but I've been starting putting it out there. I haven't made a formal announcement yet, but I'm happy to tell you. I'm going to do a tribute show to Mike Renzi next year. It's sort of something I sort of buried a little bit because, you know, when you're grieving, you have to grieve in your own way. But I think it's time. I think it's time to tell the story. I think it's time to celebrate him and making a live album of the concert. And it's going to be a concert of celebration of the arrangements that he made for me. And I'm going to do a nice chunk of the show of some of his more iconic arrangements that he made for other artists like Maureen McGovern, Jack Jones, Mel Torme, Lena Horne, and some of the stuff that he was nominated for Grammys for and Emmys for. And so just make a nice tribute to him with some of his iconic arrangements. And that's happening in April of 2026 at 54 Below. And I'm really thrilled about that. So my brain is now in that sort of mode about how to construct the show and the stories that I want to tell.
Nicholas, will you come back on the program nearer the time and we'll do a proper tribute to Mike Renzi
Yes,
and
absolutely.
really reflect your love for the man and his
Yes,
music and his time?
absolutely. I would love it.
Nicholas, before we sign off and I play some of your music, how can my listeners find out more information about you?
I'm on all of the digital platforms. You can find me on Spotify, on Amazon Music, on iTunes, Apple Music, all that stuff. And find me on Facebook and Instagram. My Instagram is at it's Nicholas King, ITSNICOLASKING, Nicholas with no H. It's Nicholas King is my Instagram, and I'm on all those things. You know, I may be a millennial, but I'm so crummy with technology, so I don't know half the, I don't know how to work half this stuff. So you have to come find me because I'm basically a boomer when it comes to technology.
Will fall over you somewhere on the internet.
Trip over me somewhere. Someone trip over me, please.
Nicholas King, it's been an
Thank
absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
you, Andrew. I appreciate you.
Said the only one I want just something about you. I don't want to be without you. The only one I want is you. I take a walk in the morning. I can feel a chill in my bones. I know it's all right. It's okay. I'll be fine anyway. 'Cause you're the warm one waiting at home. So bright, I'm blinded when you walk my way, and so many words seem to leave my mouth, and I still don't know quite what to say. So I go like this: I scat da 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 ba ba da 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 ba ba da 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 ba ba do ba do da da scream do ba do do da 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 ba 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 da da we do ba da 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 da. The only one I want, the only one I want is you. Well, I know I'm in love, 'cause when push comes to shove, now the only one I want is you. Just you, baby, the only without you. Whoa.